We're on Lamed Vav, Amid Beis, at the last line on the page, at the eighth last word on the line where it says, Rami Leira Papa Bar Shmuel Rav Yosef. The Mishnah discusses the halachic status of a Shavuya, a Jewish woman who was captured by Ovdei Kochavim. The mainstream opinion, and the first opinion of our Mishnah, is that we suspect that she was violated while in captivity, and therefore we must proceed on the assumption that that occurred. And so, for instance, she would not be allowed to marry a Kohen, because if a Jewish woman had relations with a non-Jew, she becomes a zonos, prohibited to a Kohen. And our Mishnah states that she would no longer be entitled to collect the penalty of the 50 shkalim in the event that a Jewish man violated her at some later point, because that penalty only applies where a young Jewish virgin girl was violated. The Mishnah said Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. That Rabbi Yehuda says Shvuya Shenifte Sarehi Bekedushasa. He says we do not assume that she was violated while in captivity. Where today begins by pointing out that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in our Mishnah appears contradicted by a different opinion of his. Rami Le Rav Papa Bar Shmuel Le Rav Yosef. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel raised a question, pointed out what seems to be a contradiction with Rav Yosef. He pointed out, continuing to Daf Lamed Zayin, V'sava Rabbi Yehuda B'kedushasa Kaima. Does Rabbi Yehuda actually hold that a woman in this type of vulnerable situation retained her Kedusha and did not engage in intercourse? In Ayva Tanya, we learn a Brisa in which Rabbi Yehuda seems to say the opposite. The Brisa presents two disputes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. The first one is not relevant to our discussion. This first dispute pertains to the halacha of Nida. Of course, the Torah states that when a woman has her period, when she menstruates, she becomes forbidden to her husband. And in previous times, there was another aspect that was relevant, which was that she also became ritually impure, and so she would not be allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash or have a truma or a kachim. In the beginning of Masechtas Nida teaches halacha, rabbinic stringency, which essentially says that upon discovering menstrual blood, when it comes to the issue of ritual impurity, a woman must regard herself as tamei going back retroactively for 24 hours. Because maybe even though she only discovered that she is a nida now, she in fact had already been a nida previously up to 24 hours ago, and so if she handled the truma kachim in that interim, we would have to regard those as tame. The Braisa considers the case of Hagiores Shnis Gaira Virva Sadam, a woman who converted and then shortly afterwards discovered that she became an Edom. She had apparently menstruated, so let's say an hour after she had completed the conversion process, she discovered that she was an Edom. And the halacha is that when a non-Jewish woman menstruates, that does not result in any kind of ritual impurity. The law of Nida simply doesn't apply to a non-Jewish woman. And thus, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Daya Shaita. Rabbi Yehuda rules that in this case, this convert woman is only required to consider herself a Nida from here on. The rabbinic stringency, the notion of being required to retroactively apply Nida status, doesn't apply in this case. For Rabbi Yehuda's view, the rabbinic stringency is all or nothing. If it could go back the full 24 hours or until the last time she checked in herself, then it applies. But otherwise, not. And since here, the Tum of Nida obviously can't go back a full 24 hours, because as of an hour ago, she wasn't Jewish. The law of Nida didn't apply to her. Therefore, the entire rabbinic stringency doesn't apply whatsoever. So she only considers herself a Nida going forward. However, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Harehi Kekol Hanashim Umitama Me'es La'es Umipikida Lipikida. Rabbi Yossi says, no, the rabbinic stringency applies to whatever extent possible. That is, her Nida status extends retroactively until the moment either that she converted or when she last examined herself, whichever was more recent. So let's say, for example, she didn't previously examine herself and she converted 10 hours ago. That we would retroactively deem her as a Nida for those past 10 hours. So if she handled Trumer Kachim during that period, those would be considered rabbinically tameh. So basically, Rabbi Yossi is saying that it's not all or nothing. We apply the rabbinic stringency to whatever extent it can apply. The Braisa now presents another dispute of Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, and this is the one that's relevant to our discussion. That is, Utsricha lahamtin shlosha chadashim divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that upon this woman's conversion, she is required to wait 3 months before getting married, even if we don't specifically know that she engaged in the intimacy before her conversion, because we assume that she did. Thus, before she can go get married to a Jewish man, we have to make sure that she isn't pregnant from some non-Jewish man. For otherwise, you know, if she gets married immediately to a Jewish man, we could end up with a situation in which she, you know, soon after gives birth to a child, then it will be unclear as to whether this child is from a Jewish or non-Jewish father. So says Rabbi Yehuda. However, Rabbi Yossi matir le'ores v'linase miyad. Yossi says it's not necessary for her to wait 3 months. She may get married immediately after her conversion. The Gemara will discuss his reasoning. But we see that in Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, if a woman finds herself in a situation, in a society of loose morals, we do make the assumption that she engaged in intimacy, which appears to contradict Rabbi Yehuda states in our Mishnah that this Jewish woman who was captured by Ovdei Kochavim, certainly also in, you know, a situation in which she is vulnerable, yet he says, Na Rei B'Kedushasa, we don't assume anything happened. Sounds like a contradiction. Now the truth is, our Mishnah itself indicates that Rabbi Yehuda makes some kind of distinction between a woman who was previously not Jewish versus a woman who was held in captivity. So essentially, it becomes a question of why we should distinguish between those cases. Amar Leh, Yosef replied to Rabbi Bar Shmuel, Giyoris Ashivuya Karamis. He was asking a question of Rabbi Yehuda by comparing the case of the captured Jewish woman with the case of a convert woman who previously was not Jewish, lived in a non-Jewish society, was not Jewish herself. He says there's a clear distinction here to explain why Rabbi Yehuda rules differently in each case. That is, Giyores lo minatra nafsha, shivuya minatra nafsha. In the case of a Giyores, we have a person who was born and raised not Jewish. So she grew up in that society. We therefore assume that she did not specifically avoid premarital intimacy. Whereas the case of Shvuya, which is a Jewish woman, was captured by Ovdei Kochavim. Now this is a woman who was raised as a Torah observant Jew. So we assume that she protected herself. She did not submit to a man while in captivity. Apov Bar Shmuel now points out, V'rami Shvuya Ashivuya. Yehuda does appear to contradict himself regarding the case of the captured woman herself. Nitanya, for it was taught in the Braisa, Nagiyores Vashvuya Vashivcha, a woman who was either redeemed from captivity or converted or was freed from slavery when she was already above the age of 3, at which point an act of intimacy would be halachically meaningful. Halacha is that because we assume that the woman in her previous situation may very well have engaged in intimacy, tzrichos lahamtin shlosha chadashim. Upon emerging from that vulnerable situation, she would have to wait 3 months before getting married, for maybe she became pregnant in her previous situation, and it's important to know who the father is. Even though if this girl is still a minor, she can't physically become pregnant, but because there's a rabbinic decree in the case where she's an adult, it's extended to even where she is a minor, as long as she was above 3 when she transitioned from her previous situation. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. These are the words of Rabbi Yehuda. And once again, here Rabbi Yossi argues, and Rabbi Yossi matir li'ores v'linase miyad. This is not true. In all these cases, she may get married immediately. So here we have a real problem. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, in all these cases, including the case of a Jewish woman who was captured, that we do work on the assumption that she engaged in intimacy while in captivity, which is the opposite of what Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah. Where it says, when Rabbi Bar Shmuel asked this question, Ishtik Rabbi Yosef had nothing to say. He couldn't think of an answer to this. After a while, in Malay, he asked Rabbi Bar Shmuel, Midi Shemiya Lach Beha? Have you perhaps heard anything about this? Do you have an answer? Amr Lay, Rabbi Bar Shmuel said, in fact, I did. Hachi Amr Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes suggested to answer that this last brisa is discussing Shiro'ua Shinivala, a case where witnesses saw that the woman in captivity engaged in intimacy. So being that it's factually established that happened, Buddha says that upon being redeemed, she must wait 3 months before getting remarried. The Gemara objects, Ihachi, my time to Rabbi Yossi. If the Rice is discussing such a case, how would we understand Rabbi Yossi's opinion? Rabbi Yossi says that she is not required to wait. But what do you mean? We know for a fact that she was intimate while in captivity. Everybody agrees that it's important to avoid a confusion as to the pregnancy or who the father is. The Gemara answers, Amar Rabba, Kesav Rabbi Yossi, Isha Mizana Mishameshes B'moch Shalotis Aber. Rabbi Yossi holds that a woman who engages in an improper relationship, such as if it's a Jewish woman with her non-Jewish captor, she will implement a contraceptive device, a smoch, a cloth. She here says she puts it in after, and elsewhere he says it's placed in there during intercourse. Point is that she utilizes this contraceptive device to ensure that she will not conceive. Since we could assume that she employed that, we do not have to be concerned for pregnancy from the non-Jewish captor, and therefore she may, upon being redeemed, get married immediately. And this reasoning will be applied to all three of the cases that the Raisa discusses. We have a woman who converts, a woman who is redeemed from captivity, a woman who is freed from slavery. The Gemara is saying that in Rabbi Yossi's opinion, although, even if we know for a fact she engaged in intimacy in that previous situation that she was in, we're not concerned for her pregnancy. We can assume that she had prepared this cloth, this contraceptive device, to make sure she wouldn't become pregnant from any such promiscuous relationship. The Gemara points out, Bishlama Giores. This answer makes sense. It fits, first of all, with the Bryce's case of a Giores, a woman who converted. One could make the argument that prior to her conversion, she took steps to make sure to have that democh, that device, prepared to avoid becoming pregnant, for kivin didaita le'agiyuri minatra nafsha. For being that she obviously had been planning, she was working on becoming Jewish for some extended period of time before the actual conversion, so we can argue that she therefore took precautions to make sure she wouldn't become pregnant from a non-Jewish man. And shvuyanami, the case of a Jewish woman who was captured too. Yossi's on solid ground to argue that she would take such preemptive action, the Luyada Hecha Mamtula, her being aware of the fact that at any moment she might be redeemed, her Jewish brethren hopefully will come and find her and redeem her. So that's her hope at all times. Therefore, she too would presumably make sure to keep this moch, this cloth on her, in case, God forbid, she were violated, she would avoid becoming pregnant from that event. And Shivchanami, and when it comes to a slave woman, Shivcha Kananis, who was emancipated, so we could imagine one scenario of that where she would make sure to take preemptive steps, namely the Shama Mipi Mara. We could imagine a scenario in which she overheard her master discussing how he is planning on freeing her. And so in that case too, knowing in advance that her transition to freedom, to becoming a fully Jewish person, was imminent, she would take such preemptive steps, have a moch with her, to make sure she would not become pregnant from another slave or a non-Jewish person. But the Gemara points out that's not always how a slave woman ends up being freed. The Gemara points out, Aliyotze b'shein v'ayin ma'ikel emeimar. What if she was freed by her master against her master's will because the master hit her, causing the loss of a tooth or an eye, in which case the halacha is that, assuming it's a Jewish master, he would be required to free her. Surely that is not the kind of event that she would have anticipated. That's a case where, completely out of nowhere, she suddenly was free. She is now a Jewish person. And so how can we uphold Rabbi Yossi's argument in that case, when it does not seem reasonable to assume that there she made sure to have the moch with her to prevent pregnancy? So why would Rabbi Yossi permit her to marry immediately in such a case? The Gemara says, V'chitim, if you'll try and answer, the kol memela lo amar Rabbi Yossi. The Nadir Rabbi Yossi would not make his argument in such a case, that where it's memela, where it happens suddenly, where it's no longer reasonable to assume that she took specific precautions to avoid becoming pregnant. Rabbi Yossi agrees that we have to worry that she did become pregnant. She would therefore have to wait 3 months upon being freed. But the Gemara points out, Hare anusa umefuta. But consider the case of a young Jewish girl who was violated or seduced, dimemela. That is clearly a sudden, unexpected event. And yet Vitanya was taught in a braisa, anusa umefuta tzrichos lahamten shlosha chadashim. First opinion of the braisa says that if a Jewish girl was violated, she would have to wait 3 months before getting remarried, because maybe she became pregnant from what happened. Even Rabbi Yehuda, this is according to Rabbi Yehuda. However, Rabbi Yossi, matri leyares v'linase miyad. Rabbi Yossi says she may get married immediately. So the question is, how does that make sense? Since she could not have prepared the moch device, the contraceptive device, to avoid becoming pregnant, why did Rabbi Yossi allow her to get married right away? Maybe she got pregnant from this rapist, and we don't want a situation in which we're going to be confused down the line who the father is. So she should have to wait 3 months in this case. So Gemara now suggests a new theory for Rabbi Yossi. Ela Maraba, Kesav Rabbi Yossi, Isha Mizana Misapechas, Kedei Shaloti Saber. Rabbi now tells us that in Rabbi Yossi's opinion, there's something that the woman could do after intimacy to prevent the pregnancy, describes some kind of act of flipping herself over. There's some method that could be employed that apparently is effective in preventing pregnancy after the fact. Well, therefore, even if she did not anticipate that this would happen to her, once it did, we assume that she took steps to make sure she wouldn't become pregnant from this man who violated her. Therefore, she need not wait 3 months before getting married. The one I would address is, okay, v'idach, so how does Rabbi Yehuda respond to this? The Gemara explains, in Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Chayshinat Shema lo nefcha yafa yafa. Although presumably no woman in a situation like this would want to end up becoming pregnant from this man who violated her, but Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that her attempts at avoiding becoming pregnant of that will fail. She may not do it properly, may not work, hence she is required to first wait 3 months. The Mishnah stated that if a man violated, for example, his own daughter, the halacha is that he does not pay the fine of 50 shkalim. Shnemar, for the pasuk in Mishpatim, states regarding this scenario of two men who were fighting, and in the course of that, one of them struck a pregnant woman, causing her to miscarry. The Torah states, velo yihiyah ason, if there was no ason, meaning the man didn't kill the pregnant woman, onoshi anesh, he shall be punished in having to make a payment for the loss of the fetus. The clear implication is that the event that his blow killed the pregnant woman, that in other words, it's a case of murder, he wouldn't have to pay for the loss of the fetus. So this establishes the principle of kam leib de rabba minei, that if a person committed a crime that was both a capital offense and a monetary offense, he has to pay money normally. He's only punished with the more severe punishment, which of course is the death penalty. The Gemara asks, V'ha me'hacha nafka, but do we derive the principle of kamle b'derabba minei from this pasuk? I may hasam nafka. Do we not already derive this from a different pasuk, the pasuk in Kiseitse, which is discussing a case where a bezdin is punishing a person with lashes? It says in that pasuk, the judge shall implement the lashes k'dei rish'aso, in accordance with the evil act committed by the transgressor. Through this language, the pasuk establishes, Mishum risha achas ata mechaivo, v'i ata mechaivo mishum shtei rishayos. The bezdin will not punish a person more than once, with more than one punishment for the same crime. And so, for example, in the course of becoming liable to lashes, the person also incurred a monetary liability. He is only given the lashes and does not have to make that payment. And so this pasuk appears to already establish the principle of kam leib d'rabminei. So why does our Mishnah say that we learn it from v'lo yiyah ason onosh yanesh, in the case of the person who caused the miscarriage when he was fighting with his fellow? The Gemara answers, chada b'miso mamon v'chada b'malkas u'mamon. The pasuk that our Mishnah cites establishes the point that if a person incurs both the death penalty and a monetary payment, he's exempt from the payment. Whereas the pasuk cited from Kisetse is discussing where the relevant corporal punishment is lashes. And so it's telling us that if he became liable for lashes and a monetary payment, he doesn't have to make the payment. The Gemara is saying it was necessary for the pasuk to tell us he only gets the corporal punishment, doesn't have to pay in both of these scenarios, utzricha, for the following reason. The yashmi'inan misa umamon, he only had the pasuk of our Mishnah that teaches that where a person incurs the death penalty and a monetary liability that he does not have to pay, I might have said, okay, specifically in that case, the pasuk takes a pity on the person. It doesn't, you know, also slap him with a fine, mishum de'ika ibad neshama. Since the person there is being punished with the ultimate punishment, he's losing his very life. So I might have said, okay, in that case, the Torah teaches this idea that we don't also make him pay. Of a malchus umam and the leki ibad neshama imalo. But in the scenario of kiseitze, where he's not getting the worst punishment in the world, he's getting lashes, he's not losing his life, so I might have said that we don't say kamla in that case, rather, he gets lashes and he has to pay. On the other hand, v'yashmi inon malchus umamon, if we only had the pasuk in Kiseitse, which tells us we don't both give a person lashes and make him pay, if those were incurred simultaneously, I might have said, okay, that's mishum de lo chomer isure, that there's a principle of kamla that we don't give him two punishments for the same crime, because in the final analysis, what he did was not that terrible. It wasn't the worst kind of avera. And so in that case, the Torah takes pity and says that we only give him the lashes, we don't make him pay. Avo misa umamon de chomer yisurei emelo. But in the case being discussed in Mishpatim, where a person committed a capital offense such as murder, she's dealing with the most grave kind of sin, I might have said that there's no room for any kind of leniency. Torah takes no pity on him in that case, and therefore says that not only is he put to death, but he also has to make payment. Tzricha, hence we see why it was necessary for the pasuk to teach that in fact, in both scenarios, whether you're talking about misa mamon or malchus mamon, the halacha is, he only gets the corporal punishment, and he doesn't have to pay. The Gemara asks, Ula Rabbi Meir, the Amar loke umishalem, Tarti Lamali. What about according to the opinion of Rabbi Meir, the Gemara had quoted on Lamed Beis Amid Beis, Rabbi Meir holds that in fact, if somebody simultaneously incurs lashes and a monetary payment, he gets both punishments. What then is the purpose of both psukim? That is, if Rabbi Meir does not derive from Kidei Rishasam that he gets only lashes and he doesn't have to make the payment, what then does he darshan from that pasuk? The right answer is Chad de Vimisa Mamon. Rabbi Meir will simply agree with our Mishnah's drasha of the pasuk of Aliyah Ason, that pasuk comes to teach us that we don't give a person both the death penalty and make him pay. Turning to Ben Bey is Vechada b'misa u'malkus. The pasuk of Kidei Rishaso comes to teach us that Bezin does not both give the death penalty and lashes for the same crime. And the Gemara explains that Tzricha was necessary for the Torah to articulate that in both of these scenarios, with misa u'mamon and misa u'malkus, that he only gets the death penalty and not the lower one, not a monetary fine nor lashes in addition to the death penalty. The Iyashma inan misa u'mamon, if we only had our Mishnah's pasuk v'lo ya'ason, that establishes that we don't both put him to death and make him pay, I might have said, okay, that's the halacha in that case, mishum dechada begufei v'chada bebemone lo'avdina. Because the Torah is teaching us a halacha, that it's too much to both to give a corporal punishment that affects his body, that is, put him to death, plus punish him monetarily, and that we don't do. Avol b'miso malchus, where he committed a crime that's liable to both the death penalty and lashes, di'idi v'idi begufei, you know, both of these punishments are corporal, they affect his body. Ema misa richtehi. Might have said that we should implement both. We give him lashes and then we implement the appropriate death penalty. And we regard it simply as one long extended death penalty. So v'navidba, maybe we do both of those things. On the other hand, v'yashmin and misa malchus had the Torah only stated k'dei rishaso, that we do not both give the death penalty and lashes, I might have said, okay, that's the halacha there, ditarti begufei lav dinan. You can make an opposite argument that carrying out two corporal punishments is just too much. To give him lashes and then put him to death, and that, the Torah is saying, is excessive, we don't do that. You just give him the death penalty of a misa umamon, echad begufei v'chad b'mamone eimen avid bey. But if he incurred the death penalty plus monetary liability, perhaps since they affect different things, so it's, you know, spread out in a sense. So we could argue that there's no, you know, concern there of being cruel and unusual, you know, too much, and therefore maybe both of those things are implemented. Tzricha, so we see why the Torah had to spell out that in fact we do not punish a person with either lashes or monetary payment if he's already facing the death penalty. Where now brings up a different pasuk. The Gemara asks, "V'lo sikhu chofer l'nefesh rotzeach l'mali." Pasuk that we find in Parshas Maaseh that says, "You shall not take atonement money for the life of a murderer." And the Gemara presently understands that the pasuk is coming to say that if somebody is found guilty of murder, so that he's going to be put to death, we don't also take money from him. Question is, l'mali. Why do I need this pasuk? For the point that we don't do misa u'mamon, we'll give a person both the death penalty and require him to pay, is already established from the pasuk our Mishnah cited of v'lo yiyeh ason, the case of the man who caused the woman to have a miscarriage. But again, the pasuk implies there that if he killed her, he wouldn't have to also make a payment. So what's the point of this pasuk here? Gemara answers, the Amar Rachmana, the pasuk here, V'lo sichu chofer, is saying, Lo tishko mamona mine v'tiftere miktala, that you cannot accept a redemption, a payment from him, to thereby exempt him of the death penalty. That is, the pasuk here is addressing, or maybe we could accept some kind of a monetary payment instead of giving him the death penalty. Torah says, no. This person committed murder, he is put to death, he can't redeem himself from that through payment. We're now asked about another pasuk. It's actually the very next pasuk there in Maaseh. We're asked, "V'lo sikhu chofer lanus el ir miklato lamali." What's the purpose of the following pasuk there, which states that nor shall you take atonement money for a person who has to run away to a city of refuge? It is, this person inadvertently killed somebody. The Torah says that he is then at the mercy of the close relatives of the murdered person, that they would have the right to kill this person unless he runs away and, you know, remains in exile in the city of refuge until the Kohen Gadol passes away. So once again, the Gemara initially assumes that the Torah is coming to say that we do not say that in addition to this punishment for the accidental killing, in addition to having to go to exile to the Eir Miklat, that he must also pay. The question is, that seems to be superfluous. Once again, in light of the fact that V'lo Yason already establishes that if you're talking about a capital offense like murder, we don't also make him pay. Now, of course, in this case, he's not put to death. He's sent to the Eir Miklat. But we had above the Tana de Bechizkia and Lamed Hei, which explains that once we have this principle, it says, if you're dealing with something that's inherently a capital offense, that exempts the lower monetary payment punishment, that applies in all scenarios, that is, even where it happened unintentionally. The same principle holds that because we have a more serious offense here, more severe punishment, that will exempt the lower punishment of a monetary payment. So seemingly this pasuk is redundant. Our answer is, the Amar Rachmana, lo tishko mamona mine v'tiftere min galus. Here too, just like we ended up explaining the previous pasuk, the point of this pasuk as well is to teach that you cannot accept payment in lieu of the punishment that he has to go to Galus, run to the Eir Miklat. But that raises the question, Utrei Kroi Lamali. But didn't we already essentially establish that point in the previous pasuk in the context of intentional murder? We already said there that he can't get out of the death penalty through a payment. So why wouldn't we assume that likewise, he can't get out of going to Galus through payment? Why does the pasuk specifically have to say so? The answer is that the Torah needed to separately discuss each case. Chad b'shogeg v'chad b'mezid, this last case where it was unintentional, and the previous pasuk, which discusses deliberate murder, utsrichi. They're both necessary for the following reason. First of all, the yesh minan mezid, the Torah only taught us that you can't just make a payment to get out of the death penalty in the case of deliberate murder. I might have said mishum the chomri surei, and there's a strong argument to say that, given the severity of the crime he committed, of intentional murder, avol shogeg lo chomri surei malon, could make the argument, in the case where he accidentally killed a person, so that's obviously a much less severe crime, that maybe in that situation, we could accept a payment in lieu of the punishment that he has to go to Galus to the Ir Mikla. The Gemara now explains, v'yesh minan shogeg, on the other hand, had the Torah only taught the halacha, that the person who unintentionally killed another cannot give a payment instead of having to go and be exiled to the Ir Mikla, I might have said that, okay, we're stringent in that situation, mishum delaki ibn neshama, because that ruling will not result in the loss of a life. Rather, all it means is that this person is going to have to stay in the Ir Miklat until the Kohen Gadol passes away. Aval meze de iki ibn neshama imalo. But regarding the case of a person who committed murder intentionally, even though, of course, that's a heinous, very grave crime, and he deserves to be put to death, nefesh tachas nefesh, I might have made an argument that the Torah does not want another life to be lost here. And so it offers this murderer the option of making this kofar payment and thereby avoiding the death penalty, and you know, he'll do tshuva, and even though he, of course, it took someone else's life, maybe the Torah does offer a way out, an alternative to the death penalty. Tzricha, hence we see why it was necessary for the pasuk to make both of these points, that in fact, whether you're talking about a deliberate or an unintentional killing, halacha is that the person will have to face the punishment for that, and he can't redeem himself from that by making a payment. The Gemara now asks about the following pasuk there in Maaseh. The Gemara asks, V'la'aretz lo yichupar l'adam esher shupach ba ki'im bedam shofcho l'mali. What's the purpose of the following pasuk there, which seems to repeat the point? It says, the land cannot achieve atonement for this murder that occurred, for the blood that was spilled, except through the blood of the one who spilled it. The only way to achieve atonement for this is by taking the life of the person who took this other life. But seemingly that's redundant. The previous pasuk already stated that lo sichu chofer lenefesh ruotzeach, the murderer can't get out of the death penalty through an atonement payment. Our answer is mi boile l'kidatanya. The following brisa explains the purpose of this pasuk. The brisa makes reference to the right of the egla rufa, and that is a scenario in which a murdered corpse is found, but we have thus far failed to apprehend the murderer. The Torah teaches how the nearest town must perform a rite of atonement, for we assume that to some degree the people of the town were culpable, and that, you know, maybe if they had taken care of this person, he wouldn't have ended up getting killed. And the rite entails taking a calf to an untilled valley, they recite certain verses, and then the calf is decapitated with a large heavy knife from the back of the neck. The Raisa states, Minayin she'imnis arfa egla v'yachakach nimsa horeg. Where do we know that if the town already completed the ritual of the Egla Rufa, that if after that the murderer was apprehended, from where do we know that he's not off the hook? We don't say that, oh, they already performed a rite of atonement, so that atones for what happened, and therefore the murderer need not be put to death. From where do we know that that is not the halacha, that instead the atonement of Egla Rufa is just a stopgap measure until we find the murderer? Shenemar, this point is established by the pasuk that we cited above. It says, V'la'aretz lo yuchupar la'adam esher shupach ba, etc. That says, no, the only way the land will achieve atonement is through the blood of the murderer, by putting the murderer to death. But the Gemara objects, V'ata teva'er ha'dam ha'naki mikir becha lamali. But and the problem is, what's the purpose of the very last pasuk in Shoftim? The pasuk there presents the passage of Egla Rufa, and concludes with these words. It says, you shall remove those who spill innocent blood from your midst. It is that pasuk that appears to establish this point, that the event the murderer is found, and whenever that happens, he's put to death, even if they already went through the process of Egla Rufa. So one of these psukim seems superfluous. The Gemara answers, Mi Baile Lekidatanya. The last pasuk we just cited, Vatatavara Damanaki, is needed for the teaching of the following brisa. The brisa says, Minayin lemumasim b'sayif, shumina tzavar. Where do we know that regarding those who incurred a death penalty by the sword, that the way we carry that out is at the neck, that the person is beheaded? Talmud Lomar, to teach us this, the pasuk there at the end of Shoftim states, after teaching the Egla Rufa, halacha ve'atot va'er adam hanaki mikir becha, shall thereby remove all of the murderers from your midst. The Raisa Darshan's hukshu kol shofchei damim le'egla rufa. The pasuk's language suggests a comparison who becomes liable to the death penalty for murder, in which case he was killed by the sword, with the ceremony of Egla Rufa. That is, the pasuk is coming to teach us that ma lehalan min hatzavar, just as the Torah says that the calf of the Egla Rufa ceremony, he is killed by being cut at the neck, af shavchidam min hatzavar, so too, the murderers are put to death by the sword, it means that they are cut at the neck. The Gemara asks, ima lehalan bekofitz mimul orev, af kan bekofitz mimul orev. Okay, for comparing how we carry out the death penalty for a murder with the ceremony of Egla Rufa, then why don't we further conclude that just as the Egla Rufa is killed with a big hatchet, large or heavy knife from the back of the neck, that too is how murderers are executed. The Gemara answers, Amrav Nachman Amaraba Baravua Merkra. He says, no, for the pasuk says, V'yohavta l'recha kamocha. You should love your fellow as yourself. Included in this teaching is the requirement of Beror lo misi yafa. We are required to select a death penalty that entails the least amount of suffering. Therefore, the death penalty is carried out from the throat, for that will result in the quickest death. We're asked about another pasuk, and we're asked, Kol chayrim asher yochara min ha'odam lo yipadel amali. Why do we need the pasuk in Bechukosai, which states that the condemned one, person who has been condemned, shall not be redeemed? Pasuk there continues, rather, most you must, you shall be put to death. So again, the simple of it seems to be making the point that a person condemned to death by Bezdin cannot make a payment in lieu of the death penalty, but that point is already established from Losichu Chofer. The Gemara answer is, Mibayin L'Kedetanya. Purpose of this last pasuk is the teaching that's mentioned in the following brisa. The brisa says, Minayin liyotze lehareg v'yamer echad erko alai. Minayin shelo amar klum. Where do we know that if a person was being taken out to be executed, and a bystander declared, I accept upon myself to make a donation in the amount of this person's erech value. This refers to certain fixed value that Torah gives depending on a person's age and gender. Each person has a fixed value in that if a vow is made to donate that individual's erech value to the Beis HaMikdash, he pays that fixed value mentioned in the pasuk. Rashi says, from where do we know that such a vow would take no effect whatsoever here in this case, where he invoked the erech value of this person condemned to death? I mean, the point here is that it's obvious that if the language of the vow were that he pledged to donate this person's market value to the Beis HaMikdash, that would be nothing. Because being that this person's being taken out to be killed, he has no market value. Like, you can't just sell him as a slave. He is about to die. The Rice's point is, from where do we know that he doesn't even have an erech value? Like, even though erech value is not really tied specifically with the individual's utility, let's say, as a slave, yet such a vow is not valid either. The Rice says, Shenemar, we darshan this from pasuk we quote in Bechukosai of Kol Chayrim Asher Yochara Min HaAdam Lo Yipadeh. It says, in the case of this person who has been condemned to die, there's no such thing as having to redeem, you know, a vow you made to the Beis HaMikdash. There's even an erech vow that's made in reference to a person who is condemned to die would not be effective at all. The Raisa continues, Yochol Af Kodim Shenigmar Dino Kein. Perhaps this halach extends to the stage prior to the court actually sentencing him to death, meaning perhaps, you know, once he's found guilty, even if the court hasn't actually pronounced the sentence, already at that point a vow that's based on his value wouldn't be effective. Tam lomar min ha'adam. Teach us otherwise. The pasuk states, min ha'adam, from a man. It's a limiting language, implies v'lo kol adam, that this wouldn't hold true in all cases. That is, the principle here only applies once he's actually sentenced to death. The Gemara asks, Ul Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya de Amar Nerach, Ripnesha Damav Kitsuven, Hai Kolcher Mai Avidle. Right, what about according to the opinion, Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya, who argues with the above Brisa? He says that in fact, the person made an Erach vow, the vow based on the fixed value the Pasuk assigns, using the Erach value of a person condemned to die, being taken out to be executed, that would be valid, that would be an effective value, would owe the money to the base of Mikdash. So according to Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya, what's the purpose of this Kol Cherem Pasuk? Our answer is, Mibayil Kedetanya. He darshans the Pasuk the same way that the following Brisa does. Brisa states, Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, Omer, since we do find that a person became liable to death from Shemayim, that he's able to exempt himself from that punishment through a payment. Shenemar, for example, the case in Mishpatim, a person who is a violent ox kills a person. The pasuk there states, Im kofer yushas alav, a payment shall be assessed for him, and the pasuk there states, he thereby shall redeem his life. So, meaning, Torah says, if someone's mu'ad ox kills a human being, then he becomes liable to death from Shemayim unless he makes this payment. So there is a notion in the world of the misa from Shemayim of being redeemed from that through payment. Yachalafi de adam kain. Some might have said that there's even such a thing, where a person became liable to death penalty in Bezdin. Talmud Lomar to teach us otherwise, the Pasuk Mechukosai, the one we are asking about now, states, Cherem min Adam lo yipadem, says that one condemned to die cannot be redeemed. He cannot extract himself from the death penalty through some kind of atonement payment. The Brisa continues, Ve'in li ela misos chamuros shelo nitna shigugason lekapara. Perhaps this strict rule only applies in the case of crimes for which the Torah does not provide any means of atonement in the event that crime is committed inadvertently. For example, if somebody wounds a parent or kidnaps a fellow Jew, halacha is that if a person commits that deliberately, he's subject to the death penalty. But if it occurred b'shogeg, so you know, somebody didn't know what the halacha was, you can't kidnap a person. Torah does not provide a specific means of atonement, that is, he doesn't have the option of bringing a carbon chatas to, so to speak, wipe away that sin. So that shows that those particular capital offenses are of a more severe nature. So perhaps only in the case of those offenses does the Torah say that if the person did it deliberately, then he must receive the death penalty, it's non-negotiable, and he can't give a payment in lieu of the death penalty. And so the question is, misos kalos shenitna shigigosan lekapara minayin? From where do we know that in the case of the relatively minor capital offenses, where the halacha is that if he commits the act inadvertently, he is provided with a means of atonement? There's the option to bring a carbon chatas. Like, for example, if somebody is machal Shabbos, halacha is, if he did so inadvertently, then he brings a carbon chatas, and that atones for the sin. So perhaps the halacha is that if he deliberately commits such an offense, he doesn't necessarily have to receive the death penalty, he could instead make a payment. From where do we know that he may not make a payment in lieu of the death penalty, even in such cases? Talmud lomar kol cherem. That's why the pasuk adds the inclusive term kol, to say that this halacha applies to all capital offenses, he cannot redeem himself through payment. But the Gemara objects, so why does Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Yochanan ben Baroka have to darshan this from the Cherem min Adam lo yipadeh pasuk, velo memela milo sichu chofer shemasmina? Isn't that the basic purpose of the original pasuk we cited from Maaseh? Further says, you shall not take atonement money for the life of a murderer, There's making this exact point there. You can't just take the money and exempt him from the death penalty. So kolcherim lamali. What then is the purpose of the kolcherim pasik? My answer is amarami bar chama. Itzrich sakad daita chamina. It's needed. For you might have said that yes, it says losichu chofer, which already tells us that once again, he can't just redeem himself from the death penalty through a monetary payment. But perhaps, continuing to lamed ches hani mili hecha de harago derech aliyah shelo nidna shigigaso lekapara. Perhaps that strict rule applies only where the person committed the murder with an upward motion, in which case, if the killing had occurred inadvertently, there wouldn't be an option of atonement of going in exile to the Ir Miklat. For that law of being exiled to the Ir Miklat only applies where the person committed the inadvertent killing using a downward motion. So maybe since, you know, as it is, the Torah is more strict in this case, where he killed with an upward motion, in the sense that if he did it inadvertently, he wouldn't be able to achieve atonement through exile to the city of refuge. So too, if he deliberately killed in that manner, there's no way out of this. He can't redeem himself through a payment. But if somebody committed murder with a downward motion, in which case, if he had done that inadvertently, he would have the option of atonement by being exiled to the Ir Miklat. So perhaps the halacha is, where he kills in that manner deliberately, he does have another option here to get out of the death penalty, namely an atonement payment, kamash malan. So the pasuk of Kolcherem comes to establish that even in this case, halacha is that he has to face the death penalty, he cannot exempt himself through payment. Rav objects to this answer. Now, we don't need Kolcherem to establish that point. For ha, amidatana de Bechizkiya nafka. That's already established based on the teaching of the Tana de Bechizkiya, which was quoted on Lamed Hey, that again states as follows. The Tana de Bechizkiya, Yidarshins, the Pasuk in Emor, says there, Make vehemi shalmenu, make adam yumas. It's as if one strikes an animal, and others commits property damage, he has to pay. But if he strikes and kills a person, he doesn't pay, rather he's put to death. So Tana de Bechizkiya focuses on the fact that the Torah places these two halachos next to each other. We have the Make Adam immediately following the case of the Make Behema. So it suggests an analogy between them, and specifically, we darshan from this, Ma Make Behema lo chalak deba ben shogig lemezid ben mischavin l'she'en mischavin ben derech yirida l'derech aliyah l'potro mamon al-lechayv mamon. Just as the case where a person commits property damage, he strikes somebody's animal, causes damage, he's always liable, no matter if it was on purpose or not, and no matter the direction of the blow to the animal, he's always liable to pay. Torah is teaching us, Af maki adam lo techalik bo ben shogig lemezid b'mischavim l'she'im mischavim b'derech yirida l'derech aliyah l'chayv amamin el l'potr amamin. So too, in the case of maki adam, if somebody kills another person, halacha is that being that he committed a crime which inherently is a capital offense, will always be exempt from the lower potential punishment of monetary payment, regardless of how he carried out the killing, meaning even if he did it unintentionally, and regardless of the direction of the motion, whether it was a downward or upward motion, in all cases, the rule of Kumli applies that says that being that he has committed a more serious offense here, he's not going to be punished with the lower punishment of the monetary payment. The Gemara is saying that this drush of the Tana de Bechizkiya further establishes that just as one may not exempt himself from the death penalty through payment if the killing occurred through a downward motion, the same applies if he did it through an upward motion. So this exact point is already covered by Tana de Bechizkiya, so you can't say that that's the purpose of the Kolcherem Pasuk. So the more attempts another answer, Ela Omer Rami Bar Chama, rather Rami Bar Chama explains, Itzrich, an additional pasuk is needed to establish the point that if simultaneous to incurring the death penalty, a person incurred a monetary obligation, he doesn't have to make that monetary payment. We already learned that point from the pasuk of our Mishnah, Lo Yason, establishes that fundamental point that we don't do misa mamon it's only the death penalty, not also monetary payment. Rabbi Rachama suggests that Sakidaita Chamina, I might have said, Hani Mili Hecha de Sime Eseno Vehargo Ba, that this principle of Kamle with the Rabbi Mine only applies when everything happened with one blow. He struck a person in the eye, blinding him and killing him. And so you're talking about where in the same act, he committed murder and he also obviously damaged the person, took his very life. Ultimately, it wasn't just a problem that he left him blind. He took his very life, so clearly you know, significant damages. Her teaches, and in such a case, we say, Kam lei b'derabba mine. We don't give him the death penalty and make him pay for damages. Aval hecha desimes eino, v'hargo b'davar acher. But, or for example, a person struck another with two simultaneous blows. With one blow, he blinded him. With the other blow, he killed him. So, I might have said that in this case, being that ultimately he caused the damages with a separate act, perhaps therefore we do make him pay for that act, even though based on the other act, he became liable to the death penalty. That's why Rav Chama suggests we need another pasuk to establish that in fact, even in this case, the Kamlei rule applies and he need not pay. But the Gemara rejects this approach too. Amrle Rava. Rav has said, Hanami me'idach Tana de Bechizkiya Nafka. That point as well is already established by a different drasha of Tana de Bechizkiya. The Tana de Bechizkiya, that Tana de Bechizkiya darshins, the pasuk in Mishpatim states, Ayin tachas ayin, an eye for an eye. We darshin from this, velo ayin v'nefesh tachas ayin. One would not have to both pay damages for destroying someone's eye, plus pay with his own life, being put to death for killing that person. Now, the Torah already taught us from Liyason, the rule of Kamlei b'derabba, that we don't both implement the death penalty plus requirement to make a payment. So apparently, the purpose of this pasuk is to cover the very point that Rabbi Chama brought up, that is, that Kamlei applies even where he committed the two acts, the murder and the act of damaging, as two distinct acts, nonetheless, he will not have to pay because he incurred those liabilities simultaneously. So we're back to the question, what's the purpose of Kocherim? The Gemara now answers, Ela Omer Rav Ashi, Yitzrach Saka Daita Chamina, without Kocherim I might have said, that when do we apply the rule of Kam Leib the Rabine, that he only gets the death penalty, doesn't have to also pay, that's where the monetary liability is more of a standard one. But if he did something that incurs what we call a knas, payment that's not compensatory but punitive, and so that already operates by its own rules, I might have said, hol v'chidishu shechit shatar b'knas, being that this type of payment is a penalty that the Torah innovated, said you have to pay this certain fixed amount as a punitive measure, so that's not a standard kind of payment. So I might have said, afal gav d'mikta mashalim, that payment must be made, even where he simultaneously incurred the death penalty. Kamash b'la, so we need additional pasuk to teach us that, in fact, kam leib d'rabbine applies even where you're dealing with a knas type of monetary payment. We say that he's not put to death and also fined with the knas. Gemara asks, so l'rabba d'yomer chidishu shechit shatar b'knas, afagav d'miktol mishalem. What about according to Rabba, when Lama Dalet Amibayz said that in fact, if you're dealing with monetary liability, that's in the category of a kanas, the special punitive measure that the Torah innovated, the halacha is, he does have to pay that even if he also incurred the death penalty, well then, hai kolcherem my avidlei, what does Rabba do with kolcherem? What is that pasuk needed for? The Gemara answers, sarvala ketana kamader b'chananya ben akavya. Rabba evidently agrees with the first opinion, who disputes Rabbi Chanani ben Akavya, who, as we quoted above, understands that Kol Cherem comes to teach us that even if somebody pronounces the Erech type of vow, it's not specifically connected with his value, but it's this fixed value assigned by the Pasuk to person, depending on age and gender, that even regarding such a vow, if somebody declares that about a person who is condemned to death, the vow is not valid. We've only been searching for a purposeful kocherem for the past while on behalf of Rabbi Chanani ben Akavya, who said that no, actually, such an erech vow does work. So we needed to find an alternative interpretation of kocherem. The Gemara simply answers that Rabba agrees with the original interpretation of kocherem, And if somebody pronounces an erech vow using a person who has been condemned to death by Beis Din, that erech vow does not take effect.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.